Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Lindsay Hughley, and today we're bringing back Brian O'Connor. If you missed Brian's episode last month, he is the president of the Bankers Insurance Agency and has been providing insurance coverage for banks throughout Texas, Oklahoma, and the Midwest since 1989. Today, Brian and his team at Bankers Insurance Agency insure well over 250 banks. They insure banks ranging in assets from less than $50 million up to $14 billion. So welcome back, Brian.
Thank you, Lindsay. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So in our last conversation, you had mentioned that there were several policies that a bank needs to be aware of, and you gave us such a good overview of the financial institution bond. So I was really hoping that maybe today we could dig into the directors and officers insurance policies.
That sounds like a good plan to me.
Yeah. So this is definitely, from my perspective and my experience, definitely one that I feel I've been more involved in and more made aware of what it is. But I would really love to dig into the nuances of them all. But we'll start off with, what is the actual purpose of D&O insurance?
Okay. So the purpose of D&O insurance, and I would say 99% of my banks have D&O insurance, is to protect them in the event they have a lawsuit against them, and it protects the bank and it protects the officers in the event of a lawsuit. By having D&O insurance in place, it also gives you essential peace of mind, and it provides financial stability. You don't have to worry about, well, if we get sued, do we have to have a pot of money sitting off to the side? So the main thing is to protect the officers and directors. In fact, most policies are written, all employees of the bank are covered in the event of a lawsuit.
And so as banks are kind of going in and making their decision on whether or not and what type of D&O policy to get, are there differences that can be found between different D&O policies? And if there are, can you explain those?
Sure. Unlike a financial institution bond, which we covered last time, most bonds are pretty much the same. They're all modeled after what we call the old Form 24, and the verbiages are almost identical. Truthfully, no two D&O policies are exactly alike. They all have some nuances that make them a little bit different, but they're all intended to do the same thing, which is to pay, as I mentioned, for a wrongful act. And I do that because it's a defined term. All the D&O policies will pay for what we call a wrongful act. And that definition is almost identical, verbatim, practically, from company to company. And in a nutshell, a wrongful act is the actual or alleged statement, misleading statement, act, error, omission, neglect, or breach of duty while acting as a director or officer of the bank. And I do a lot of board presentations, and they all want to know just what we're talking about here. Do I have coverage, and is it going to protect me? You know, I hear that, you know, these things don't cover anything. And truthfully, that definition is very broad. Mm-hmm. And again, I'll repeat it. It's the actual or alleged statement, misleading statement, act, error, omission, neglect, or breach of duty. And what I usually tell a board of directors is, you screwed up, or somebody's accusing you of screwing up. And when I get a lawsuit across my desk, you know, I'll read through it and I repeat that definition in my mind. And I can tell you it's probably 95% of the time what I'm reading will be a covered claim. Now, there are some other, you know, differences in the policy, but the differences are kind of like, you must notify us within 30 days. You must notify within 90 days. I mean, those are kind of minor differences. There's a thing called, well, it's not called the hammer clause, but essentially the hammer clause says, if you have a lawsuit and we, the insurance company, you know, especially typically discussing it over with your law firm, if we think we can get out of this thing, and let's just say for $250,000, and we say, you know, we think we need a bail on this and pay up $250,000, and your board of directors says, no, I'm not going to pay. We didn't do anything wrong, and we're going to fight this thing. Then the hammer clause says, okay, you can do that if you like, here's your $250,000 that we said we'd give you, and from now on, your defense costs are reduced to 50%, or 25%, or 75%. That's one of the nuances that are found in some D&O policies. Does that make sense?
It does. It does.
Now, you know, are there exclusions? Yes, there's all kinds of exclusions, like there is in your automobile policy, or there is in your homeowner's policy. Everybody has exclusions. But the exclusions that you'll find in a director's and officer's liability policy are kind of common sense. It's illegal, immoral, unethical. Okay, and we don't pay for that. It's covered under another policy, like it should be covered under your general liability policy, or maybe it's covered under a previous policy. We got got a claim right now going on that the insurance companies are going like this. No, that should be under your policy. No, it should be under your policy. So, but one of the exclusions would be it's covered under another policy or a previous policy. It's a violation of the 1934 Security Exchange Act. Don't ask me what that is, but that's excluded. Nuclear, pollution, you know, again, these are common, I'd like to think common sense exclusions. But again, when I go back to a board of directors, I say, you know, you got a lot of coverage here. Rarely do I ever see anything that would not be covered by D&O unless it's like really, like I said, unethical, immoral, illegal.
Yeah, so that feels like, it does feel like a lot of common sense would go into kind of making that decision on whether or not D&O is going to cover that. So what job positions are typically covered? I know in the title it's directors and officers, but like what about a loan officer? What about a compliance officer?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the policy, again, is very broad in that regard. Besides any officers and directors, most policies today are endorsed that will include all employees. In other words, even down to the janitor and the tellers, they would all be covered under the policy. And then questions we get sometimes, well, what if I quit? What if I move to another carrier or another bank? The policy says, again, under definitions, who's an insured? It's anybody who is, was, or shall be an officer, director, or employee of the bank. So think about that. Anybody who is, you know, you'd be covered as a compliance officer of your bank. Anybody who is, was, you've left the bank, maybe you're retired, and yet you're pulled into a lawsuit 6 months after you retired. So you'd be covered. Anybody who shall be, they hire you today and you get sued 6 months from now. So again, the definition of who's covered is also very, very broad. You know, one of the things that I didn't mention as far as the differences, I want to make sure that people understand this. The financial institution bond, and I don't recall if I talked about it last month or not, the financial institution bond and directors and officers liability policies are what we call claims made policies. And I emphasize that because there's also a thing called an occurrence policy. And I don't want to confuse anybody, but it's important that we're talking about bond and D&O, that you understand that these are what we call claims made policy. Well, what does that mean? Very simply, whoever's insuring your bank, when the claim or the lawsuit is made, pays for the claim. Whoever's insuring your bank when the lawsuit is made will pay for the claim. And I've got an example of that. Let me see if I can bring it up here. So what we have here is an example of a claims made policy. And in this case, it's going to be a financial institution bond, which is the same as, you know, directors and officers, as I said, is also going to be a claims made policy. If you look, you see you got years 2019, 2023, and 2025. What happens sometimes, not often, but sometimes your bank will change insurance policies. So in 2019, you have company A, insurance company A. And in 2023, for whatever reason, they move over to company B. Then sometime between 23 and 25, your bank does a wrongful act that we talked about. You don't know about it yet, but somehow or another, your bank may have harmed a customer. You repossessed some of their property. You didn't perform on a loan. Anything like that that could be covered under directors and officers liability. It happened in 2024. And then the beginning of this year, you've moved again to another insurance company, and it's Company C. And then in June, July, all of a sudden you get sued by your customer for something that happened back in 2024. Because these are claims-made policies, you didn't know anything about the lawsuit, but all of a sudden you discovered it, or you got sued, you know, in June of 2025. Company C or your new insurance company would be responsible for the claim. That's how a claims-made policy works. Whoever's insuring your bank, when the claim is discovered or the lawsuit is made, pays for the claim. And a difference would be an occurrence policy. I have this slide up here for an occurrence policy. What's an occurrence policy? Think of your bank's general liability, and I just put up a slip and fall policy. Somebody comes into your bank and slips and falls. And in this situation, they slipped and fell, let's just say back in 2023. Okay? But they said, we're fine, we're good, everything's fine. And then all of a sudden, today, after you move to a new insurance company, they sue you for the injury they received a year or more ago. Your general liability policy would go back to whoever was insuring the bank when the slip and fall occurred. Again, I'm not here trying to confuse you, just know there are differences in policies. For our edification though, going back to this slide, your bond and D&O are what we call claims made policies. Whoever's insuring your bank when the claim is made will pay for the claim. Okay.
Yes, that is a really great distinction. And so do you find that typically that banks usually keep that information? Because I'm just thinking if it was an occurrence made policy, that you'd have to go back, you'd have to find that information. And with the occurrence, I feel like it would be so much easier to have that information ready and at your fingertips.
Well, that's a good question. So, you know, banks don't change their commercial package policies very often. Truthfully, they don't change their bond and D&O policies very often. Maybe every 6 years. Bond and D&O are changed every 6 years. Why is that? Well, the bond and D&O for smaller banks are typically 3-year policies. And if you've only been with a company for 3 years, I, as your insurance agent, unless they're really not handling your claims well or they've really jacked up your premiums, we usually keep a bank with the same company for at least 6 years. And so normally you'll know if you're going to get sued within a 6-year period or not. Normally, yeah, you know something's going to happen. But again, if it turns out that you move to a company, you can do that with confidence, because even if you get sued 6 months later for something that happened 12 months ago, your new company is going to take care of it. Now, going back to your question about occurrence, same thing. Most banks don't change their insurance companies very often. And they're going to remember, you know, that, you know, Mary slipped and fell. And what we always recommend our banks to do, if you have a slip and fall, is you reported it to the company. You know, just send it to your insurance agent or send it to your insurance company just to make them aware, hey, we had somebody fall down. And I'm sure your banks are doing this today. Truthfully, I'm sure they're all doing this today. If somebody gets injured in your bank, you're letting your insurance agent or your insurance company know. So if it turns out they do get sued later on down the road, they're going to be able to go back to their logs, or the insurance company is going to pull it up and go, yeah, here it is. We have it right here.
Yeah,
so that's usually not mentioned. Now, one other thing, there's difference in insurance policies too. D&O policies, there's two types of D&O policies. There's a duty to defend and no duty to defend. And is one better than the other? Well, it depends on your attitude. So here's what they are. A duty to defend policy simply says, in the event of a lawsuit, the insurance company gets to tell you who's going to defend you. Noted defensively means in the event of a lawsuit, you can name the insurance, or excuse me, you can name the law firm that's going to defend you. Okay? Now, which one is better? You know, most of my banks have no duty to defend because they really like their law firm. They have a very good relationship. They have a lot of confidence in them. The law firm knows your bank very, very well. And typically, these law firms specialize in banking. A board of directors say, no, just take care of it. We make it go away, you know? And so they don't care. They don't mind having duty to defend. But you have to know what kind of policy you have. Most of our companies are no duty to defend. But if there's a box checked, it completely changes it around to duty to defend. And so that's why it's important you have an agent that understands directors and officers' liability and they can recognize the differences between them. I think it was Chubb Insurance Company. Used to be always duty to defend. Intact, Zurich, Hanover, Travelers. Travelers is the one that if the box isn't checked, it could go either way. But most of the time, Travelers as well as no duty to defend. Now, this is important. A couple insurance companies, I can't remember which ones, when it comes to employment practices liability, which we'll talk about in a second, but if you have an employment practices liability lawsuit, it's always duty to defend. And the reason why the insurance companies do that is those lawsuits can go south really fast. And so they want to make sure that they have a law firm that specializes in employment practices lawsuits. Okay, so duty to defend, no duty to defend. The other thing that you don't see very often anymore, but 95% of the D&O policies out there are what we call pay on behalf. In other words, once you get past your deductible, then the insurance companies theoretically are supposed to be cutting checks to the law firm to take care of your lawsuit. Okay, that's called pay on behalf. The other type of D&O policy is called an indemnify policy, which means you take care of everything yourself. And at the end of the day, when you get done with your lawsuit, send us the bill and then we'll indemnify you. Lloyd's of London, I think, is the only policy out there that I can think of today that is an indemnified policy. Everybody else that I just mentioned that we represent, it'll be pay on behalf. Okay?
Okay. And sometimes bankers are under the assumption that there might be too many exclusions to the policies and that maybe they think that the companies won't pay the claims. What do you have to say towards that kind of generalized statement?
Well, you know, Lindsay, this is when I kind of go back to what I say when I meet with boards of directors. I try to cut it off before we even get to that point. You know, I go through the definitions with them. You know, it's a very, very broad definition. I say, yes, there are exclusions, but those exclusions are really kind of common sense exclusions. Some of the old time bankers that are still out there, you know, I started in the 90s when we had a lot of bank failures. And so the D&O companies were putting on, directors and officers liability companies were putting on a lot of exclusions that you don't see today. One of the biggest ones was a regulatory exclusion. In other words, if you got sued by a regulatory authority, there was no coverage. That was because banks were failing. And when a bank starts to fail or when a bank fails, whether it be, you know, the FDIC, the OCC, the banking department, they'll end up suing the bank for, you know, mismanagement of that bank. And so, you know, the old adage, insurance companies don't like to buy claims. In other words, if they can really avoid something that's, you know, a big deal, they will. And so that was one of the things they would add onto their policies was no regulatory coverage. And so that may be in the back of the minds of some, you know, old time bankers that, oh, this thing isn't worth the paper it's written on. Well, I can tell you, we pay millions of dollars of claims over the years. I mean, it's definitely worth its while to have it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so do you feel that directors and officers, is it one of the policies that banks can have that does pay out historically more, or out of all the different policies that we've mentioned so far, which does pay out most over just the general year-to-year basis?
That's a good question. Boy, it kind of depends. When we're having a good financial run, in other words, the economy is going great, we see very few lawsuits. It's when there's a downturn in the economy that we start seeing lawsuits. Why? Well, it's because, you know, the banks may say, you know, call the loan, saying, you know, we're stopping your loan. And what happens is then they get sued by the customers because of that. Over the last couple of years, employment practices liability has really raised up its ugly head. And we see, historically, lender liability is the first source of lawsuits. And that's what I should mention. Wrongfully possession, failed to perform, anything that has to do with a loan, and a customer sues you because of that, that'll be covered under lender liability. And that was always the number one source of lawsuits. And number two is employment practices. Wrongful termination, sexual harassment, discrimination, you know, what have you. That was always number two. And now it's just reversed. Employment practices is now the number one source of lawsuits in banking. And so you just have to be aware of that. But, you know, lately, we talked about it last time. I mean, there's been a lot of counterfeit checks. We had a lot of ATM thefts. We had, I call them stop and robs. We had a lot of those a couple of years ago. We haven't had too many robberies. But, you know, one embezzlement could be hundreds of thousands, not millions. So I guess it kind of depends. But I would say overall, we probably pay more directors and officers liability claims than we do financial institution bonds.
Gotcha. But, and so to round out with directors and officers, are there any additional nuances that you usually really try to make sure that your boards understand that you want to make sure that we definitely talk through?
Well, again, you'll always have coverage for the directors and officers. And by the way, the policy, I said directors and officers and off employees, but it also covers the bank as well. And that's very important because 95% of the time, they name First State Bank. They name First National Bank. They don't even mention a director and officer. So the D&O policies, besides covering everybody, including the janitor, it also covers the bank. And that's really important because as a director of a bank, you probably have your money invested in that bank. So if you sue the bank, you're really suing, you know, the director's pockets. So it covers that. We also cover fiduciary liability, which would be the bank's own retirement program. We covered that as well. If the bank has a trust department, we'll cover the trust department also. So there's a lot of aspects to banking that the policy will also pick up. So again, I go back to, is it worthwhile having a D&O policy? Yes, very much so.
Absolutely. So for today, do you have anything, I guess last month's episode, you gave us some really good advice in regards to the financial institution bond that we'd gone through. Do you have any specific advice that you would like to leave us with in relation to the directors and officers insurance policies?
Well, you know, first of all, make sure that you understand your policies well. Make sure you have an agent that can come in there and explain it to you. If not, then get a company representative in there to explain it to you. It's really great. I love when I go to a board meeting and there's lawyers. I really like it when there's lawyers there because they always have good questions. And typically I'll know their answer to their questions because I've been doing it a long time. But I think it's important that they have a comfort level. The other thing that you want to make sure is that you have enough limits. I mean, every one of our banks has a minimum of $2 million and we go up from there. In fact, most of our banks probably have a $3 million limit. You know, what is the right limit? Well, there are guidelines out there that I provide to our banks that I can send to you that if you have some of your audience that wants to, you know, see this, and we've got guidelines based on your asset size. What do most banks, your asset size, buy as far as coverages are concerned? And I'll be happy to send that to you so you can see that. And we use that as a guideline, as I say. But it's really, what does it make me feel comfortable with? You know, there are some banks out there, you know, they may be, let's just say, $250 million in assets, and yet they'll have $10 million in D&O, which is really high for a bank that size. It's whatever they feel comfortable with. I mean, a long time ago, I had a bank that was, I think they're maybe $1 billion. They were big, but not that big. And they had $40 million of director sponsors liability. It was crazy. And I told them, you're overinsured. But turns out that the entire board of directors were plaintiff's lawyers. And so they knew what it was to be sued. And so I said, fine, I'll sell you $40 million worth of coverage.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely, I feel like this is very much, is very important and tied to a bank's risk appetite, what they're willing to expose themselves to. So it's definitely a huge critical thinking piece of what is the right insurance policy.
Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll leave you with a teaser though, because you asked me the question, you know, where do most of the claims come from? And it's not bond, it's not D&O, it's not cyber. It's a commercial package policy. And if you have me back and we talk about that, I'll tell you a little story about our biggest loss in 35 years of insuring banks. It's very interesting.
Wow. Well, yes, we will definitely be having you back, Mr. Brian, but we want to thank you so much for your time today. And for the rest of our listeners, this is Banking Matters.